Hello and welcome to the CLG podcast. I'm Michelle Brown and I have the pleasure of being joined today by Dr. Sarah Hussein, should I say, and we'll be talking about her new novel. Just to give you a bit of background of Dr. Sarah Hussein, she's a Huddersfield-based author and educator. Her novella, Escape from Syria, was a winner finalist in the People's Book Prize. In 2018, she won the Miss Shakespeare competition in Yorkshire and was commissioned to write a monologue, which was performed on International Women's Day. She was shortlisted in a competition run by the University of Huddersfield, and her short story, You Will Be Free One Day, My Dearest India, is included in the anthology Trouble, published by Grist. Furthermore, it was highly commended. She completed a BA Honours of Art Literature in 2008, a Masters of Arts in Creative Writing in 2018, and has recently completed a PhD. And today we will be talking about her new novel, In the Foothills of the Himalayas. Thank you and welcome, Sarah.
Hi, really nice to be here. Thank you for having me, Michelle.
And thank you to KLTV for
doing absolutely.
So, Sarah, I really enjoyed reading your book. I always say the sign of a good book is I need to know what happens and I've got to keep going. And that's what happened with your book. It gave me a lot of pause for thought. There's a lot of things to think about and it was very educational for me.
Oh, that's so fabulous, because that was the intention.
Okay, excellent. I'm glad I read it right then. So I wanted to ask you, why did you write this particular story?
Yeah. So when I was growing up, I felt I never saw myself represented in literature. And actually, when I began doing, I wrote a short story collection and I wrote a novella. But whilst I was doing the PhD, I come across many books written about the British Raj era. And actually, you'd be interested to know that of all the books, South Asian women were either absent or a backdrop characters. And I really began to realise that this association with the victimhood trope and with them being kind of associated with always being oppressed, this narrative was kind of being pushed forward. So I decided that the best way to challenge this rather than sit and complain about it was to do something about it and write a book which would amplify the voice of South Asian women. But what makes the narrative, I think, powerful is the fact that it's based on true events. Because when I was doing my research, I come across the women of Chipko and the women who embraced the trees. And when I discovered these amazing women, I was really surprised as to why I hadn't heard about them, because my whole life, there were no role models that I felt I could aspire to be like, who looked like me. And for people who don't kind of understand how that feels, you know, it is important for representation, because when you see someone who looks like you doing well, then you feel like there's hope for you. So I think when I came across these amazing women, which I really would like to talk more about, it was just to answer the question, I wanted to include them and I wanted the whole world to know about these amazing women.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And I'm in the same boat, being a black woman, that. And if you can't see it, you can't aspire to it, because you feel like that's no chance for me sort of thing. So that's brilliant. So how much of your PhD research is included in this book? You just touched on the fact that
It's all of it. So this is 7 years of research, 5 years of writing. This whole novel is based on my PhD research. And it's been rigorous research and me trying to be objective. So initially, when I was doing the master's degree, when I was growing up, I remember the first time I was in school and I came across Othello. And I remember being asked in year nine, do you think Othello is a tragic hero or an evil villain? And at that time, as a young woman, I just resonated with Othello and I just felt a connection with him. I think that was the only kind of book presented with someone, you know, who wasn't white, and I just kind of connected with him. So what happened was I really didn't know why I was here actually in the UK, and I was trying to figure out why I was experiencing discrimination. You know, you're kind of trying to find, you're confused about your identity, where do you belong? But then what happened was it was only through postgraduate study that I really began to understand British South Asian connections and the fact that the only reason that my ancestors are here is because Britain was there, and that, you know, India before partition was part of the empire. So I began to do that research and I realized actually, it's actually not common knowledge. You know, there are people who know about, you know, the British colonization in India, but there's so many people who actually don't know about it. So that research then began then. And even in my mind, all those years ago, I had it, I wanted to write something which would help people be more informed. But then it was kind of through my research that I then began to become, because what happens is when you start your research, the first year you might have an idea of what you want your thesis to be about, how you're contributing to new knowledge, but it can change. So by the, because you're learning and you're progressing. So what happened was by the time so many years ago, and I'm doing all this research, then I come across, so first my research was about the social and political implications of the British Empire in Hindustan at the time. But then all of a sudden I realized that, where are the women? And then it was when I then realized, I looked at the environmental colonialism, and then it was like, wow, these women they're educated, they have forest knowledge, they have bespoke forest knowledge. They're talking about climate change today. And I watched Greta Thunberg, but these indigenous hill women were talking about this years and years and years ago. There was a woman called Amrita Devi who, when the Maharaja built a fort, he wanted to build his fort, he wanted to chop the forest down, and they gave their lives for the forest. And I think before, for those people who are kind of not in touch with, perhaps maybe get a little frustrated with people who they think talk green all the time, I perhaps wasn't as informed as well in those aspects of social justice until I realized the connection between deforestation and landslides and flooding. And when people see landslides and flooding in South Asia, they think it's a natural phenomenon and it's just a natural occurrence, but actually it's because of illegal felling. And when I discovered that, I felt like everybody needs to know the importance of ecologically appropriate trees in the region. And what's really interesting is that these women, there's a banj tree. And that banj tree, it's like a wide leaf. So when that falls to the ground, it creates a leaf mold deposit, which stops the rain from, it absorbs the rain, but then it stops the landslide and flooding. When the English traders went over to India, what they did was they replaced this ecologically appropriate tree with a commercial pine so that they can export it to the UK. Now, these women were aware that of the importance of these trees because they needed it for fuel and for fodder. They needed it for everything, really. They weren't housebound women. So what happened is then they began to protest. And it's just interesting that these women, they did what you call satyagraha, non-violent activism, but they weren't celebrated because, you know, Gandhi, for example, was the face of this non-violent activism. But these indigenous native hill women, who you wouldn't associate with being, for example, Western educated, were ahead of the game because they knew the importance of this forest knowledge.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing. Just going back to something you said, you're trying to be objective. How easy is it for you to be objective? And you said you changed route as you were doing your research because you found stuff out, which must have given you emotional reaction.
Yeah.
So how easy was it for you to be objective? I think you were. I think it comes across, you know.
Well, I think I am objective because I'm writing, it's a Hindu, the majority of the protagonist is a Hindu, not a Muslim, and I'm a Muslim.
Yeah.
So that automatically that makes me objective because I'm writing about Hindus in a very positive light.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it wasn't about religion, race, it was about the truth.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that I have integrity. You know, money's never been the biggest incentive in my life. When I wrote Escape from Syria to my short story collection, this was really about integrity and making sure that when I was researching, there was no, for example, anachronism. So I wasn't writing about, you know, I was making sure the period setting was right. It was quite difficult to be able to write a historical fiction novel, but then write a fiction, make sure it was dramatic. So in my mind, I envisioned it being like a Bollywood movie or a series. And that was the way I kind of kept like making it entertaining, but making sure that I was really careful because I had to make sure that I was concerned. I don't want any sharp-eyed historians coming after me that I didn't write. For example, when one of Gandhi's journals is published, is it the right time? Is it period? So this was, it was a long time to do that. Every time I'm writing the plot, but is the history right in every chapter? You know, am I doing truthful? So I think I would like to think that I was objective and I was fair. Otherwise, there's no point in writing a book to be able to educate people if I wasn't going to be fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
You say you. How did you do your research? Where did you go for your research?
So there was a lot of primary and secondary research, journal articles, books. At one point, I got a piece from India, which was sent to London University, sent to Huddersfield University. This was written by Gandhi. I wasn't allowed to take it out of the university, but I accessed it there. Oral history, videos, everything, you name it. And it took a lot of time.
Yeah, I was good. Where I was going with that, which you've just answered, was it all based in the UK? Because we all know that we get educated in the UK.
Yeah.
From a UK perspective, but you've just mentioned that you got.
Well, there's this lady called Dr. Vandana Shiva, and she's just amazing. And I read a lot of her work, and she was part of the Chipko movement. And the Chipko movement are a movement who embrace the trees, but they become popularized in 1970. And around the world, in the West, people were kind of calling them, you know, tree huggers. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting now that we celebrate this movement. But she was actually a grassroots level. She was part of that movement. And I just really felt like it was so important to pay homage to these women. And I hope I've been able to do them justice.
Yeah, I think you have. You said that the Chipko movement was 1970s. And you were talking about these women. How long ago was that they were?
So
when was it set?
So my story is set in 1950 when Gandhi returns from India. But the reason I set it early was because, for example, when you wake up one day, any civil rights movement, any social activist, in order to have a movement, it's not one campaigner. There are multiple of campaigners. A lot of voices go unheard. Recently, I was watching The Godfather of Harlem, and I was, I'm a big fan of Malcolm X. And actually, they're talking about Bumpy Johnson, and they're talking about all the voices who were part of Malcolm X's movement. And there are so many women who have just been unheard along the way, who've died, mm-hmm. who have given their lives. And I just feel like there are so many unsung people along the way. For that, I think it dishonors the success of a movement if you don't pay homage to all of those multiple campaigners.
Couldn't agree.
And I wanted to really focus on this forest encroachment and the fact that it was going on because of British imperialism for a very long time. And I think it was. I feel like sometimes people get defensive when you talk about colonialism. Why are you still talking about the past? But it is so essential today to talk about that environmental colonialism. Because look at the climate catastrophe we're having today. And actually, I believe if we look at and listen to what these women are saying about the forest, I think we could help deal with some of the problems we're having today with regards to the environment.
Yeah, it's quite shocking to see how far back people knew that the world was heading to where we are now.
Yeah.
And still nobody listened. And I think as well, nobody was listening because it was women that were talking about it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You said the story is based on your research, but is any of it taken anything from your own family? Have you put any characteristics into any of your characters that are from your own personal family?
Absolutely. The character Vidya, when the child's born, she's a beautiful, chubby, curly-haired, big brown-eyed child, and that was me based on Khadija. And the front cover of the novel, I sent a younger version picture of my daughter to the designer, and they then created this image based on my daughter. So the actual, her whole characteristic, her strong characteristic is based on my daughter's personality. But the moment when in one of the scenes, what happens is the child won't suckle. So the nurse comes along and sticks her finger in the child's mouth, and then the child begins to suckle. And that actually happened to my son. When I had him, he wasn't feeding. And the nurse came along, stuck her finger in my son's mouth. And I was kind of disgusted. But then all of a sudden he began to drink. And it was, when you're writing a novel, you know, obviously it's fictitious, but there are going to be aspects of perhaps people who you've been, you know, the characteristics of people who you might have been around that you've been noticing. And you kind of stick them into your characters. So it's, it's quite an interesting journey to be able to do that, really. I enjoyed creating the characters. I had all these posters on the walls with each character because they talk about don't make a flat character, make it rounded. So how am I going to make sure that I'm doing justice to each character? And there were so many. So can I do justice to each character? So I had to have each character on the wall. And what makes each character unique, yeah, and not just... Because there's a group of women who've gone on activism. Are they all the same? No. Pia's not the same as Anushka. They're all kind of different. Mm-hmm. And I think that took a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, it's they are rounded and you do believe that they're real. You touched on something because I thought when I started the novel, it's a very dramatic opening. And I wondered what made you think that you wanted to open it in such a graphic way?
Yeah, because... It is an anti-colonial novel and it is a dramatic, plot-driven novel. And the fact that she comes into this world fighting and then the whole novel is about her fighting. And I feel like it was, you know, in order to have a novel that catches your attention, and it's not just a novel which has beautiful description. And I come across a lot of, I'm not undermining the writers who have written about that area, just very beautiful description of the Himalayan region. My novel was about... It felt so good when you introduced, and you said you felt that you learned a lot from it. And we're always told as creative writers that you don't, you know, it's not about you don't write novels in order to educate someone. But I completely disagree. If you're clever enough to be able to capture someone and teach them something, I think the novels that I've enjoyed have been the ones that I've learned something from. So I think for me, I think that was the point of having this dramatic entrance.
And it was very dramatic. So you've just touched on something. Sorry. You just touched on something about other books that you've read about the descriptive way they've written. But I actually thought that not necessarily... What do they call it? When I was reading, it was purple prose, they called it, where you've got a load of words for no reason at all just to make it beautiful.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying here. Yeah. But I felt like you had very descriptive storytelling with attention to detail on the incidents, like when you were talking about the oppressor's moustache and such graphic detail so I could see him and depict him. Why did you choose to include so much description in that way? Not, you know.
So I think it was, it's really nice to hear you say that because... I am someone who's very much, I like to write a novel that gets to the point because I think I have had, my sister always tells me she doesn't like reading. So I wanted to write a novel that is more plot-based rather than, you know, really slow-paced and, you know, character-driven, more plot. But I felt like, how can I make a plausible novel? And I think that's what it was. It was the details. Because it's set in India and you're gonna have foreign characters. And I'm writing... You know, although I hope that one day everybody reads it, but it was for a Western audience initially. So I'm hoping that them small details can really help someone picture this person and show, because actually those small details, it tells you about someone. So if somebody is wearing a pristine jacket, somebody perhaps looks after themselves. If somebody is, for example, wearing, you know, broken shoes or, you know, kuse sandals, what are... you know, run down, it might be that they can't afford it. So I was trying to capture those small details to show, give a bit of background. Mm. And the fact that Vidya, you know, you picked up on the irregular toe. And, you know, the fact that she's different and she has something unique about her, but still she's strong and she's special and it's okay to have, you know, we're not...
Celebrate difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Celebrate
absolutely.
Difference.
Yeah.
And also it gives her... like a superpower in a way, in a weird way. So talking about Vidya, when you described her emotions, it feels very raw. And again, did you draw on any personal experience with this? So I don't want to get into the plot. That's why I'm trying to be a bit. But when she has her most negative experience, let's put it that way. And it just, I felt it. And I was like, did you draw on something from that?
I wonder whether subconsciously I did, you know, because when I'm trying to write this novel and do justice to her character. And when she's going through what she goes through, you know, I was trying to express that. And maybe I did at some point subconsciously, you know, think about, because in my life there have been instances, and I feel like when you talk about those instances, you're kind of told that you're playing the victim card. So then you kind of try not to talk about it, which is unfair, really, because you're allowed to talk about your lived experience, and people shouldn't get defensive about that. But however, this is fiction, and this is a character who has a lot of challenges, and you're kind of rooting for her. So to hear you say that you felt that emotion, again, that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. No, I did. Right. Why? You've got lots of characters, you've said, and you could see why most of them were included. But Ruspa, why did you include the subplot of Ruspa?
Yeah, Ruspa, I felt that... I read Arundhati Roy's Doctor and the Saint. So we're talking about, again, objective research where I'm trying to be fair in my representations of India at the time. And I felt that I cannot do, I'm talking about social justice for one group of women, and it's unfair to then disacknowledge a whole group of women who are also a minority there. So I read about a lady called Sarika and how her family was killed when I read Arundhati Roy's book. And it really, really upset me. So I felt it's a subplot, but I felt it was an essential subplot.
Okay.
Because I'd like to think again that I'm a woman empowerment is for everyone.
And it goes to what you said about educating, because there was a lot of the things in your book that I'd heard about. I'd heard about partition and the Raj and all that business. Yeah. And I'd heard about people like Ruspa, but didn't actually understand it.
Yeah.
And even though, you haven't gone into major detail about it was horrific, and it was an education, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
I knew it was bad, but didn't understand the truth of it.
Yeah.
And it was that whole thing, and I think unfortunately it's still a little bit of lives being worthless, a human life being worthless sort of thing. And that's what came across in that for me. It did make me very emotional, actually. You set your main character Vidya through so many trials and tribulations. Is it a true depiction of life for many people in India, or
I think,
is it just her?
I think it's fiction. So in order to write a good novel, they need, I know it might be kind of talking about Rocky Balboa, talking about Sylvester Stallone, but I was watching the Sly documentary, and the underdog who's trying hard, everybody is rooting for the underdog. So what happened was, when I was writing the novel, I was quite excited about learning about these women. So all I wanted to do was write this story about how a group of women go on a trek to save the trees. But I realized that it's not a plot. That's not a story. It's just what a woman just goes and recruits women and go. So I had to really think about how can I make it interesting. And it needed to be a thriller. I needed an antagonist. So I began to watch documentaries and learn about who, which antagonist really, which one gets on your nerves, which makes your blood boil. And it was only really that I realized that I had to have Balraj begin, because again, no social activist is born without having a backdrop. She only wants an independent nation because her dad wanted an independent nation. She's seen her dad go through so many trials and tribulations. There's so much going on. The pandemic. There are people trying to fight for an independent nation. And I wanted it to be the voice of the oppressed, the voice of the colonized, because of the research I did. All of the novels that were written were by European authors, and it was the voice, romanticized depictions of the period. And this is probably, I'm proud to say that this is the voice of those people who I'd like to think who were experiencing it. And thus, what does it feel like to be the oppressed? Not the nice romanticized depictions where Memsahib memories of people going to this beautiful nation and saving these people. And it needed to be from their perspective. And I think that's why there are challenges, because they have to have been challenges for them to get to a point where they get to an independent India in the end in 1947.
I felt that all the way through. I really did. You touched on about the fight and the non-violent activism. And I the one thing I felt, yes, that's what Vidya saw her dad doing, but do you think, well, the way you've depicted it, was it to say that her dad was successful or not successful in his non-violent activism that he carried out?
I think the fact that, I don't think that it was unsuccessful, but I think the women were. And without me trying to kind of undermine the men's efforts, because there are so, through my research, honestly, there's amazing men who've been doing so much grassroots efforts too, you know. But this story, you're allowed. I feel like you're not, when you're talking about one inequality, you're not undermining another one. So while I understand that there have been multiple campaigners, including men who are part of this activism, the women have not been talked about and celebrated, but they're a driving force, because without being essentialist and without kind of associating women with naturally to the natural earth, I actually am a big believer of, you know, Mother Nature and women being caretakers. And I'm a big believer of the womanist movement and the fact that we're moving towards, you know, we kind of celebrated often when we are, a woman is seen to be progressive in the Western world if she's racing the same race as a man. And I'm kind of against that. I think that men can learn from women, and these women, we can learn from them as women. So I think that's what the point is of, with what you're saying about Baraj. Yeah, he tried so hard, but his daughter, she did more.
She took it to another level.
Yeah,
she did, with all the other women. And you know what? I've just written here, because it's called Mother Nature.
Yeah,
I think there's a clue there, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think I haven't got any more questions, really. I've really, really enjoyed hearing how this book was created. And yeah, I just think if anyone wants to get a succinct way of finding out about the history in that time, and actually, I feel like I can go and talk about it now and want to find out more as well because of it. It's really enlightening. It has everything. And the environmental side of it is really scary to see that was going on so long ago. Yeah. And yet here we are today, still talking the same talk.
Yeah.
So do you think you've ended the book with a feeling of hope?
I hope so. Initially, the ending was they were successful in... But I realised whenever I watch a series or read a book and there's not a happy ending, it leaves me a little bit sad.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that I wanted to have an ending that did give hope. And I think the fact that we were moving towards an independent nation, did you like the ending?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay.
And I felt like, that why I liked it was, it wasn't all, oh, it's all fantastic and wonderful. It was just like, we're getting there. We've started. We've started it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I felt it was. So yeah, for me, it was a realistic ending. Because if it had been all really nice after all I'd read through, I'd have felt a little bit let down. So no.
Yeah, because the truth is that, you know, that this felling is still going on. Deforestation is still happening. There's still work that needs to be done. There's still landslide and flooding. There is still that exploitation happening. So I am really glad that you enjoyed the ending. But to be honest with you, there's so much I could talk about for hours with you on my research, but I thank you for taking the time to read the book.
Yep, and I do recommend reading it to anyone who has the slightest interest in any of the aspects on the book, because talking to you today has been really great to find out the backstory and even more detail. So thank you.
Thank you.